Hey, what's going on, everyone? Thanks for tuning back to the Dave Sintang podcast. We have Jun Kim here, who is your favorite Asian coach. And thank you, Omar, for connecting me with Jun and tagging him. I find it's awesome when you meet someone who's like a mirror image of you in a lot of ways. So I relate to Jun as someone who shares a lot of similarities, the love for meditation, for always getting better, and for helping out the Asian community. There's not a lot of Asian coaches out there. So when you meet one, you're instantly connected. So yeah, thanks for being here, Jun. I appreciate you.
Oh, Davidson, it's my pleasure. I'm super excited for the conversation. And it's so interesting how, you know, like Omar, and just to give you guys a bit of context, like I met Omar through this community called Flow Fam. And it's run by this person named Gavin. He's another coach too. And Davidson actually interviewed him in one of the episodes. And it's a really interesting experience where you just really get to get out of your head and speak whatever's in your like heart. And it really kind of helps you just tap into a different level of feeling that you generally wouldn't necessarily feel. So it's a very interesting like space. So if you get a chance to stop by, really just great group of community and people who are just there just to help you just kind of get out of your day-to-day routine and just feel something different.
We're both similar where we invite these uncomfortable experiences in our lives. I felt the same way about Toastmasters. I was like, so I'm like, I would never do Toastmasters. Like I was so judgmental about it. And when I actually did it, I'm like, it's like one of my favorite communities now, right? Because like you said, it's like, there's so many times we're in our heads and just kind of being in that flow and being in that like spur of the moment where we'll play different roles. Like lately we've been doing like, all right, Davidson, so you be Pac-Man and you be the groomsman or the best man giving the speech for Mrs. and Mr. Pac-Man, right? So like just right with no preparation, just right, jumping right into it. Like, I feel like it helps you really kind of stay on your tippy toes.
Yeah. And I really love that you spoke into just getting out of that routine. And especially as like folks who come from that Asian background, right? Super structured and logical. A lot of the times, and this is super important too, right? And Davidson, like you were talking about, like you have a book on masculinity, right? Like this is super important when it comes to like making any decisions, performance, or whatever it is. It's really important to be able to like bridge the gap of like the logical thinking and then the more of the creative thinking. It's like, you can do a lot of business problem solving, but there's a lot that comes through like your intuition, right? There's a saying that we're in this day and age where we are thinking from the neck up, and then we forget everything that happens from the neck bottom. But there's so much wisdom around it. Like even Steve Jobs says it, right? Like you have to follow your intuition or your heart, right? Because that somehow knows exactly what you want. But we've been so like programmed through just our upbringing to like shift that down or suppress it, that we forget how to tap into that. Because a lot of the decisions that I personally made too, like a lot of the tougher ones, like it's been through like heart and intuition. I feel like it helps you lead you to like pretty cool places too. Like for me, I would not have this conversation with Davidson if I didn't follow my heart and intuition kind of situation. So yeah, I just want to speak into that. Yeah.
And I'm sure meditation had you really tap into your intuition, right?
Yes. So meditation, if you ask me what's the one thing that really transformed my life, it's definitely meditation. And meditation has helped me not only tap into my intuition, but kind of like a space where I can really just take a step back. And, you know, for those of you who are like in the business world, like, and you hear meditation a lot too. And I feel like there's a reason around this. Like, let's say Ray Dalio, who runs like one of the most successful hedge funds in the world, he talks about meditation, kind of looking at everything from a bird's eye perspective, right? It helps you just get out of your head and see how everything is connected. And, you know, there's different ways to talk about this. Like, you know, if you talk about it from, let's say, a spiritual standpoint, people might talk about a universe perspective or whatever. But at the end of the day, what's really important is it just helps you stay centered and focused and get out of your head and then kind of really be present with what's happening in front of you and then start actually tapping to different parts of your brain so that you can access different decision-making capabilities. So like there's a lot of benefits that I personally got from like meditation, combination of, let's say, questioning like the Asian upbringing, plus just making better decisions and just so many different things. Yeah. So I'm more than happy to speak into that too. Like,
Yeah, that there's so much to talk about there. I just realized I didn't do a proper introduction. So to give you a little bit more background on Junin and why I think it's interesting that he went completely the opposite way in some ways, right? From being more thinking focused and more heart-based. But his background is he graduated from BC, from Boston College, with a finance accounting. So clearly very intelligent. You went into GE with the executive leadership program, which we all know is like one of the most competitive and most sought after leadership programs, where, you know, some of the most successful people in the world have come from. And as obviously from one of the most, I would say GE is probably one of those companies that everyone knows about. And there's case studies on management consulting and leadership on that alone. And then you were a vice president at Point72 Asset Management. So take more of the traditional Asian path or the first generation Asian path, right? It's hard not to bucket every Asian under that, but you know, you took the path where most Asian parents would be proud of, and especially Korean parents would be like, yes, like good life, you know. And then you started your own company. So, and that's called Happy Successful Asians. So you're a mindset and performance coach. And yeah, I think what's really unique from our interaction so far is that you're good at flowing in the moment, and you're not very judgmental. Like, you have the energy that you're not judging people. Like, it's very, like you said, intuition, and you trust your heart, right? You're not thinking about, oh, like, do I want to connect with the person? Like, you're forgiving and, you know, very compassionate.
Oh, thank you for all the kind words. This is amazing. Please keep flattering me. on a serious note, like, really grateful. I just want to give the listeners context too. Like, for me, you know, I was definitely on that path where I didn't really question anything outside of like what was sought out for me, meaning like, you know, it's the whole story around work hard, immigrant story, and then like rise up the corporate ladder. Having said that, like, I went through a lot of struggles too, right? Like, even in GE, I went through one of the lowest moments in my life, like fell into depression. And wow. Even though I was performing like well, but right after I fell into depression, I couldn't perform. And I got to a point where like my performance rating was like the lowest, and we had some tough conversations, right? So it's something where like that actually took me on this whole personal development journey, where like a friend gifted me a book. And then that kind of shifted my mindset around a few things, like kind of thinking about my perspectives on how I should think about making decisions, meaning, and long story short, this book is called How Will You Measure Your Life by Clayton Christensen. And it talks about a story where, like, you know, this person, the author, like, he is a Harvard MBA grad, McKinsey. So he has all of these like qualifications, right? And he teaches it, recently taught like at Harvard, and he talks about how all of these high performing individuals, like in the US, at least we have 5-year reunions for most of the schools, right? And every 5-year reunion, like the first 5-year reunion, like everyone came together and they were like excited. They were working at amazing jobs, exotic locations, married amazing looking partners. But then like the second reunion, their reunion and onwards, he noticed that fewer and fewer people were showing up. And he was curious, like, why? And he started looking into it. And then pretty much people, intelligent people, bright, like people who had like a great grand mission for like themselves and the world, somehow ended up in positions that they never imagined, whether it's divorce or let's say in jail or whatever you can think of. Like, intelligent people, like, this happens, right? And happens unconsciously. So like that kind of made me seek things outside of GE. And then that took me like on like this little gap moments. It was a few months where like that led me to meditation, and then to Point72 Asset Management. But what I wanted to speak into meditation is I'm very shy and introverted by nature. Like in college, I actually went through college being afraid to ask questions and actually answer questions. So even though I knew this was in the back of my mind, meaning like, why can't I ask questions, and I wanted to overcome it, I couldn't overcome it. And this went through my work years too. So there was a lot of fear and doubt associated with these things, right? Because let's say in the Asian culture, you're taught to like be silent or whatever it is, right? You don't want to speak up to the authority. And then it wasn't until meditation where I really got into just like working through a lot of like my attention and like my mind, where once I started putting more time and energy to it, I noticed these like gradual shifts where I started speaking up in meeting, and where I started speaking my honest thoughts. And that's when I was like, wow, like this is really helping me. So that was one of the reasons I got into meditation. But beyond that, there were some incredible experiences that I also gained through it too. So that's why I say like meditation was the one thing that really helped me, because there was a challenge that I really wanted to like work through. And I was aware about it for years, but I couldn't figure it out, whether it's through books or through other people's like mentorship, but somehow meditation helped me overcome that.
That's fascinating. Yeah, it's funny because I also feel the same way. Like I think before meditation, I was more like thinking about what other people wanted and, you know, whether it's mentors or my managers, directors, VPs, et cetera. It was like, okay, well, my manager thinks I'd be good at this, so I'm going to do this. My mentor says I'll be good in sales, so I'll do this, right? Or so it was very external focused. And meditation, similar to you, helped me really like discover myself. Well, what do I want? Whether it's walking in nature or just listening to the birds, like being present. Wow, like there's a river, you know, living in Manhattan, like just appreciating the river, right? Like I just appreciated the little things, and I was less externally focused.
That's interesting. And remind, like, what type of meditation do you do right now?
That's a tough question. I do like everything. Like I'm definitely, anyone who has read my LinkedIn profile or knows me knows like I dabble with everything. So it's funny because like I guess I have commitment issues even within meditation. So I never want to be pigeonholed as like, oh, you're the transcendental meditation person, or you're the, like I've gone to every meditation studio in Manhattan probably. So I've tried Inscape, I've done like Insight. I don't like Zen. Zen's a little too intense for me. So I would say the Jilin, like there's a lot of like Buddhist meditation that I like when I go to like the Buddhist temples and stuff like that, I really enjoy that. But in general, I would say I like it, like Headspace was what kind of got me on. That was like kind of like the gateway drug into meditation for me.
Got it. And the reason I asked is like, I feel like for people who meditated, they dabbled on different types of meditation. And what I feel is important when it comes to meditation is to find a practice that helps you silence your mind or get into a specific state. Like everyone has felt this in some shape or form. For instance, for someone, because like sometimes people might find meditation challenging, right? And that's why I talk about state, because you can access that state in different shapes and form. Mm-hmm. And let's say if you're a very nature person, you'll feel this sense of oneness, or, you know, when you see mm-hmm. something that's so grand and you realize that you're so small in the grand scheme of the universe or the nature yeah. or whatever you can think of, you get into the space where like your logical mind just gets silenced or it gets suppressed down. Right. And that's when you can actually do a lot of your creative thinking, because when you are in your head, a lot of the times it's based on a specific box or you put constraints around it. But when you get into a state of like, you can talk about it in terms of flow too, right? Like where you are kind of just in that moment and whatever ideas start surfacing, right? As opposed to you forcing it. And that's when you actually release certain aspects or certain ideas like outside of you. That's why when it comes to meditation, test different things. Like, you know, there's different ways to build specific habits. Like, and I'm more than happy to talk about that. But I think one of the most important thing is to find a medium that helps you access a specific state. And whatever helps you do that in the most, like, let's say, fun manner or most consistent manner for you, I think it's important to just go with that first and then build some sort of practice around it. Like I'm a big believer of that. For me, like there's a specific meditation, like I dabbled to a few things and I realized like, I think the meditation I practice, it's definitely more of, what is it? Like letting go of your thoughts, but there's a bit of like hypnosis around it too, like subconscious programming stuff too, which goes to like a different layer. But yeah, when it comes to meditation, find something that helps you get into a specific state of like flow where you've felt it in some shape or form. It's this presence where you're so present that you forget about time and you're just so in the moment and you're in, let's say in nature, you're in awe. It's that same type of feeling. Chase the feeling.
Yeah, I like what you said. So based on that reflection, yeah, nature is definitely my meditation. Like when I'm hiking or when I'm in the mountains or when I'm in like a good rhythm, I feel like I'm one with the rock and like the butterflies and the trees. And that it's like weird to say that, but it really works for me. Like I feel very connected to the world when I'm in that state.
And one comment, like, so meditation came to me just by chance because we're talking about this. And I'm just not the type of person where like, if someone has a brochure or some sort of meditation sign, come try it out for free. I am not the type of person that would go and just do it. So like, I'm like one of the least likely people to do it. And I just happened to come across it. And I think the big idea, and hopefully like people can resonate with this is, you know, I got introduced to meditation through a friend, but like the core idea behind like this meditation practice that I got into, it's this concept where when you come into this world, right, you come in with a blank canvas, right? Meaning you don't have a concept of what's right, wrong, what to believe and not to believe in, and what's possible and not possible. Meaning there is no like this instruction that tells you you have to do something, right? It's through our five senses that we take on pictures. Experiences are like education, our environment, whatever it is, like you start taking on a lot of what's happening around you because it's a part of your survival mechanism as like a kid. You're just learning and growing, right? And slowly that starts defining like your path, if you will, right? So like our Asian parents told you, this is how you should make decisions. This is what's good and bad. You got to people please. You got to make sure you don't disrespect the elders. And these are all important too, in some sense, right? Like keep that on, but also question them, because naturally, like we call this programming, if you will, or like whatever habits you create around this, your thinking, it's going to tell you got to get a good grade. You got to get a good job. You got to rise up the corporate ladder. Those are all like, it's from a place of like your parents worrying and wanting the best for you. Having said that, those are all pictures again. Even worry and anxiety and fear, those are all pictures. Little kids don't have a concept of what a mistake is, what to fear and what to doubt. They just do it, right? So those are all learned behaviors. So what I realized was that if these are all pictures, like those are all in your mind. Like I can't see it. Davidson can't see it, right? And when you start questioning them, and the idea is you let go, this concept of like we subtract them and let go of these pictures, you're really just trying to get back to the original state of that blank canvas. And that blank canvas, there is no concept. And we call it like truth, universe, whatever you want to call it. When you create from that space, it's a blank canvas. So there is no concept of this is what you have to do. This is what you have to believe in. This is what you can or can't do, like your limitations, right? So when you are tapped into that state, right? Let's say we talk about state again, and you create, it just comes through you, right? As crazy as it sounds, it comes to you and you're like, wow, where did this idea come from? It was there.
Yeah, I like what you said. I think the blank slate canvas is like tough for people who don't meditate, right? I think I guess you're right. Like some people, it might be like, they get so wrapped up in folding clothes or washing the dishes. And like, even in that moment, or gardening, right? Everyone has like sort of their place where they feel in that flow state. I think the blank slate is where anything is possible, right? The podcast, the books, like everything, like my YouTube channel, everything was created from those things where I'm like, huh, like I have these like moments where I'm like, why not? And it's rare to be in that state, right? Because it's like, I think most of us are always thinking about more logical things, especially like you said, being Asian, it's like practicality is it's like a luxury to do things just out of hobbies, right? I think I can only speak for a lot of my Vietnamese friends, you know, like because we come from not a lot of wealth and stuff like that, like our parents were literally just trying to pay the bills, and they still are, right? So for I've had discussions with like older generation Asians, they're like, dude, like that's a luxury to be depressed. Like we're so busy that we don't even have time to be depressed. You know, it's like, that's like such an Asian thing to say. And I was like, yeah, like makes sense. Like if I was escaping a war and trying to like, you know, make sure that I'm alive and like my friends were killed, like, you know, by Thai pirates, I would think the same way too. Right. So, yeah.
So interesting you bring that up. And that's a very similar story to like my dad too, like in terms of like his upbringing, I can never relate to it. Like he talks about days where they struggle to like eat food like each day, because this is post-Korean War. He was in the middle, you know, he lost his like dad at a very young age too. And he had to support like his older brothers, like his siblings and stuff. So he went through a lot. And having said that, like always just bear in mind, like when it comes to like your situation, it's different from like what your parents went through. But Like when it comes to meditation, it's not just about feeling happy or feeling centered. It is about that, but I'm very practical too. It's about how can you elevate your performance? How can you make better decisions? How can you maximize yourself? Let's say it's not about choosing either or, right? It's about, okay, like I have to make decisions. I have to optimize my days, or I want to maximize my performance or potential. And I actually see meditation as a way to do that. Right.
Yeah.
And that's how, like, let's say Ray Dalio sees it too, or like other folks, right? They do this because you want to prime yourself to get into a specific state so that you can perform. But in that process, it also allows you to tap into some other great feelings too. So like, I'm very practical about things too, because like when it comes to spirituality too, like some people can get super off tangent and woo-woo-y, and I love that stuff. And I really do. Like, I get super curious about it. But at the end of the day, it has to be practical. You know, like it has to be relevant to you, like so that you can somehow apply it, right? For instance, like you can't go to like a freaking, like, I don't know, you can't be a monk and go meditate for 20 years and not just like do anything. That's all great. But if you ask me to do that, I might test it out. I've done like meditation for like 2 weeks, like straight kind of situation through a retreat. But at the end of the day, like for most of us, because that's not as relevant, we have to figure out how can you bring that same level of learning and experience so that you can apply it to your days so that you can experience more of what you want. Right? Yeah, that's how I see it.
Yeah, it's interesting. The monk argument comes up a lot, right? And not to judge them or make it wrong, but I think most of us want to be more contributing members of society, right? Like they contribute in their own world, their own way. But like, I'm not, yeah, I definitely don't want to be someone who's like, going off for like years at a time and no one ever sees me. Like I would still want to interact with people and like have a quote unquote more of a normal life. So yeah, that's a good point. I think even 10 minutes, even 5 minutes makes a difference. Like I've meditated for 5 minutes before because I'm like, whoa, like I feel just really out of it and I don't feel like really don't feel like I'm in a good place. And 5 minutes makes a big difference, right? So it's funny because I think people that are like, I don't have time for meditation, that's exactly who needs it the most. Because I was like that too. Like, I'm like, dude, I would never be a meditator. Like I was so against it because I'm like, I just didn't understand it. And then, but I think for me, like that's the thing I needed the most because I'm like, wow, like I'm so glad I was open-minded enough to try it, even though I was so against it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's why it's really important to, I think two things that, the one thing that really helped me, I'm not gonna lie, like when it came to meditation was like a community, because like I did it with people who were doing it together.
Yeah.
And then it's really helpful to really, let's say, find something that works for you and start small. And that's why I said like, find something that helps you to get into that state, because it's very different for each person. And the one thing I can say like is, a lot of people who like do well, however you define success, like they have some sort of practice that looks like this. And not to like get super religious, but let's say if you do go to church, like prayer can be some form of meditation for you, right? Whatever you do as like a religious practice, whatever it is, it just helps you kind of quiet the noise that's going, the distractions outside of your world so that you are really focused on your inner world. Right. And I know this can feel a little deep, but like at the end of the day, you cannot create what you don't have inside of you, right? Whether it's like through your thoughts or like how you just operate. At the end of the day, like let's just say if you think about an equation, like you are the creator of everything, and the inputs that goes into your external world is you. Like you are creating that, right? Any type of ideas too, it comes through you. That's why like meditation just helps you silence a lot of the distractions outside of you. And this goes back to other people's expectations, right? It's really, really hard to like silence that when you are in your day-to-day, because especially like if you don't have a practice to silence yourself, like let's say you get up and all of a sudden, like you start looking at your email notifications from like your work, social media, and all that stuff, you're already reacting to what's happening because you're seeing it, and then you're already in the cycle of your habits, your normal habits. But just by having this practice, it helps you just be more proactive and start editing more of your life. Meaning, you know, we talk about that blank canvas, but you know, there's a saying like the first half of your life was about accumulating, meaning learning what's working and what works best for you. But then the second half is also about editing what works for you, what doesn't, and then doing more of what works for you, and then letting go of what doesn't, and bringing in new ideas that will help you do more of like what's needed for you.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I feel like you have a lot of like the you're very integrated with your thinking brain and then your feeling as well, right? So you're like a what we call like a integrated like being, right? Because I think there's like you said, like the business tends to be more thinking focused, like your TJs, right? In the Myers-Briggs type assessors, right? And then, you know, I'm definitely more of a feeler, but I feel like you're able to like really rationalize like these more woo-woo concepts. That is a way for people to digest it. That's more comes from, like you said, the more traditional Asian backgrounds that our parents tell us to be doctors and lawyers and more engineers and more of like the practical professions. So I like how you're able to explain these concepts.
I really appreciate that. That means a lot because I'm a big believer in like, there has to be spirituality, science, and strategy kind of combined. Mm-hmm. And I work to bridge that gap. And I think it's really important so that other people, it's relatable for other people. And one thing I wanted to mention, you know, when you talk about meditation and like the monks, I'm not going to lie. Like we all have different purposes. If you ask me to do it, I think that actually sounds fun to me for some reason, but for some, I deep down, I'm like, there's another bigger purpose, or I feel like I just have to work on some other things for now. And mm-hmm. I do feel that meditation also helps you, like, you know, when you said, I don't come from a judgmental space, like I really do my best to do that. I'm not perfect, but if you start meditating, it also helps you actually empathize and not mm-hmm. judge others a lot more, because you realize that everyone's in their like own stories, and it just helps you take a step back. Right. And then it also allows you to just relate to other people. And honestly, that helps you become a better leader, just a better person. And you think about contributions just from a bigger standpoint too. And that's why I'm saying like meditation just has so many other benefits, right? It helps you just relate to other people and see yourself in other people's perspective. So it's an incredibly powerful tool to do that. So it helps you make better decisions. It helps you be a better leader. It helps you be a better person. So there's triple whammy at the minimum, and there's a lot more coming through you.
I love it. And to pivot a little bit, I'm going to read a couple of your LinkedIn recommendations. I used to work at LinkedIn, so I love reading people's LinkedIn recommendations. I think it's just one of the highlights of LinkedIn. And you have so many, so I'm just going to choose a couple. So Amy Wong, who's the ICF certified coach, agile coach, she said, June is hands down my favorite Asian coach. Before working with June, I felt very challenged to create video content for my coaching business, and in particular, to embrace how I look, sound on camera. June helped me recognize the mindset blocks I've unconsciously built around this and create strategies to tackle them. I know now that creating videos does not have to be hard. In fact, I can and will have fun with it. I've been able to create new videos in a way that feels good and vibrates with high energy. Thank you, June, for supporting me to break through this barrier. That's huge, I feel like.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot too, because I struggled with getting on camera or just creating content, generally speaking, because I'm a weird millennial, if you will, meaning I'm just like more private and I wasn't on social media. And it's this whole entrepreneur like coaching journey that took me on that. Like I created a Facebook account because my friend forced me to in college. That's what I recall. And Instagram, I'm not on Instagram. I'm more primarily on LinkedIn. But yeah, it can be fun. And I think everyone can do it. Yeah,
I think there's something about Asians and the saving face concept that I think that's why we get, because we're almost more concerned about our reputation than actually anything else. Like it's almost like the most important thing. Like I think that's why Koreans and Japanese have the high suicide rates out of like every type of, because we're so concerned about how others perceive us that it almost doesn't matter what we think, or at least that's what our parents have taught us, or elders, or whatever it is, like society have told us.
Yeah, there's a lot of that pressure. And I think it's really important to just understand how you can start working to let go a bit of that. And this goes back to living up to other people's expectations. Yeah. And it's not easy. There's going to be, you know, you can take small steps. Like I'm not gonna, like when I left my job at GE, I didn't tell my parents. I told them after I left my job.
Oh.
So yeah, the conversation, it went fine, but they were shocked. They wished that I had that conversation with them prior to actually doing it.
Yes.
So there's a lot of pressures around these things, but at the end of the day, you have to, I think, realize that, you know, your parents want the best for you, right? Mm. But having said that, you also want to make choices that actually align with like what you actually want, because at the end of the day, you're going to live with yourself. And then, you know, there's a few things that comes with this, right? Meaning, there's a saying, like one of the biggest regrets of like the dying, it's there's that book around that, right? One of them is like, I wish I had lived a life true to myself, right? And this is coming from like people like who are like close to their like death. And it's really important to do that, because at the end of the day, I think what's important is to do your best to live life with fewer regrets. And I promise you, when you start choosing things, and this goes back to your heart and your intuition telling you, like, you know, right? And that's why, like, there's a saying, like, when your head, heart, and hand align, your head, heart, right? That's when, like, you'll feel more, you'll make decisions that feel good or make you happier or make you more aligned with your decision from a long-term standpoint, right? And when you do things for other people's expectations, that's when you realize that your head logically is thinking that this is what I should do because of these expectations, but your heart or your intuition or your gut is telling you, no, like do something else. And the conflict generally will like translate into, I feel stuck, I feel miserable, I don't like this. And there's different ways, right? Because the one thing I do also want to share is, you don't have to like jump shift your job the next day unless you're really in a dark situation, right? Yeah. I feel like I didn't realize that at that time, but I think I did have like a bit of suicidal thoughts. Like I would joke around about like jumping off the building. I would like joke around with my colleagues saying like, good thing those buildings are like made up with strong glass, because if it wasn't, I would jump off the building. And you know, the thing is like, I was in a pretty dark moment, but for the most part, like if it's like okay and it's manageable, let's say on a scale from 0 to 10, like you're at a 5 or 6, there's different levers you can pull to start shifting your relationship and your energy, like with your works, right? You could be just burned out. And, you know, honestly, like you could just enjoy your job, but it might be something else. And that's where you want to like focus on using those leverage points. So like, don't try to like focus on like this, I got to like leave. It could be, that could be a decision for a lot of people, but also like think about other considerations too. I think I just wanted to share like that thing too, but expectations, sorry, long-winded answer. It's really important to start working through that, because that's when you can start making sure your head and heart and head align. And I promise you that will kind of lead you to some cool experiences. Like it won't be like dandy and easy all the way, but that's just how life is, right? You just learn to like work through it. Like getting to where you are wasn't easy. You had to work hard. You had to make certain sacrifices, right? So nothing is easy. There will be problems. It's about how can you work around those problems.
I'm curious as to about these, because I'm sure you've thought about it a lot. Do you think a lot of the depression came from because there's a lot of pressure, or I have expectations, like people want me to be successful? Was it because of external factors, you think?
For me, that's a really good question. So I think there was a few things. But first and foremost, it's a combination of things. When I hit the lowest moment, right, it was working long hours. It was like 80 plus at this time, 80, 100. And naturally, when you're there, like you're not in a good mental state. And also, because I was there, what didn't help was that like my performance level just completely dropped, right? And I was having conversations that I've never had in my life. And also, I think it was just a spiral where I started like feeling incompetent, not believing in myself. I was tired. I didn't see at the end of the tunnel. And I just didn't have much of a life outside of work, and all of my time and energy was so sucked in that I just couldn't think beyond it. And I'm not going to lie. Like I didn't really know what depression was at that time. I actually had to Google it. I was like, why do I feel this way? And then Google said symptoms of depression. And I was like, oh my God, this is exactly how I feel.
There's no language.
Yeah, like emotions was not a language growing up in an Asian culture. I'm sure that's the case for a lot of people. You just like suppress it. You don't talk about it, and you just get stuff done, and you achieve your goals. And it's interesting, like, I'm like thinking there was just different factors that contributed to that. And honestly, I wouldn't say I really did enjoy my job as much. I'm not, so like whenever you do anything, right, fundamentally, there's going to be certain things that you enjoy and certain things that you don't. And I think a good balance is trying to make sure that you spend 70, 80, like the percentage of just might slightly shift, but make sure that you enjoy most of what you do. Like there's not going to be any job where you enjoy 100% of it. Even entrepreneurship, there's a lot of things that people that you just might not see or people don't talk about. You got to do everything, right? It's fun. I love what I do, but there's some things that you just don't want to do, but you just have to do it, right? So I just want to be very practical about that. It's just making sure you find, but then it's the people aspect, right? That's at the end of the day, like what helps me stick through. But there were a few contributing factors for me where I realized that doing this type of work wasn't as exciting. It didn't align with like what I actually wanted to do. And then my manager at the time too was pretty checked out because they were going to roll out of the program, a combination of things. And the learning growth that I wanted, I didn't necessarily get what I wanted to. I was like burned out too. So there was different things that just really created a snowball effect for me at that time.
No, thanks for sharing. I think a lot of us coaches come from, have had that like that dip or that moment, that defining turning point sounds like so dramatic, but I've also like was like super depressed. And, you know, most people, it's funny because it's like the happiest people like you and I are the ones that often have had like the darkest moments in a way. And similarly, yeah, like I was getting like let go from all these different jobs. Like, I mean, you've had like a pretty successful like career track, but dude, I was like, I barely graduated from college. I was like addicted to drugs. I was like dating a bunch of women all at once, but never really able to open up. Like I just had like very low moments where I felt like had like no career success, like never did well in school. Like just, you know, I barely even did well in high school. Right. So I just didn't have a lot going for me. So yeah, I similarly like have like had such a low moment where I mean, I've never thought about suicide. Like, I think that's like definitely like that's, but I, you know, like your Anthony Bourdain's and Robin Williams of the world. Like I can definitely relate because I felt like similar to me, like everyone thinks I have this amazing life, but if I don't think I have this amazing life, like who cares what everyone else thinks, you know? So yeah, I can relate to a lot of what you're saying. Like, I think they call it the golden handcuffs, right? Like, you know, that GE program, like similarly, even your career afterwards, like that's how I felt about a lot of these companies that once I start having success, I was like, wow, I'm making good money, like on paper, like I get to go to all these cool conferences and I have an expense account. I could take my clients out to fancy, you know, like I was doing on paper, like it looked great, but I was like, why am I exhausted? Like, why do I feel unfulfilled, right? Even though like I have this quote unquote, like what many people would kill for this life, right? And then I started realizing like, oh, it's because it's not what I want. It's what my manager would want, or it's what like society is telling me I should want, which is like more money, better, bigger houses, better cars and things like that.
I'm so happy you spoke into that because, and you know, for those listeners, if you're tuning in and if you're going through anything like this, it's okay. Like you're not alone. It's an experience that people go through in different shapes and form. So like, just see if like, get help in whatever shape and form that you feel is relevant for you. For me, like, you know, if I were to share like three things that helped me at that time, I actually just exercised. I went for runs and I'm not a runner. Like running is not something I enjoyed and I somehow got into it, but somehow that just made me feel better because like when you're running and if you run to the point where you're like trying to struggle for your breath, like, you can't think about depression. I think it helps from that physiological standpoint and thinking standpoint. And the second was reach out to like your close friends, your prior managers, your close friends, because sometimes when you're in a dark rut, you can't see beyond that negativity. And when you speak to like people that are not there, they can see the positive side of you and how great mm-hmm. you are, because at the end of the day, you are great. You're just kind of in this dark moment where you can't see it for yourself because you're so caught up in that circumstance, right? And the third piece is figure out a way to surround yourself with positivity. What that means is whether it's surrounding yourself in a great community where you can speak like honestly about your situation or just like positive people. For me, like it was actually books and I wasn't a big reader. My friend just somehow gifted me a book at that time. So figure out how you can start shifting your mental and emotional state. That's what helped me. But just to let you know again, you're not alone, and it's okay. You can work through it.
There's a Korean drama called It's Okay to Not Be Okay. And I'm so glad I watched that series. It was for me, like, I'm like, wow, like this is needed in the world, you know?
Like, I gotta watch it. I did not watch it, that's why. Yeah. Oh, I heard good. It's great.
I love it. I mean, it doesn't hurt that, like, they're very attractive as well, you know, that makes it like easier. But yeah, I love what you said, especially the just do things that make you feel good, right? For me, it's like, if I know, like, I'm in a really crappy place, which happens all the time, I know, like, when I was working, like, near Battery Park, like, I would walk, there was, like, an area where there would be birds that would, like, swim in that little, like, bird bath thing. I guess it's, like, a fountain. Yeah, yeah. So, like, for me, it was just so cool to watch, like, birds kind of, like, shake their wings and kind of, like, I was, like, this will make me happy, right? So, it's just, like, just doing things like that helped me realize, like, okay, am I actually happy at this tech company? Am I doing it because, like, for external factors, like, it looks good on paper, like, this is a well-established brand. And then I was like, no, like, I'm not happy, you know? And that's what caused me to kind of seek, like you said, more of these unconventional paths.
Really awesome. I think that's super important in anything that you do, because, you know, in between goals, there's life. And then what's most important is to figure out how you can best, like, ride that wave. There'll be like moments where it's amazing and that's great. And there will be also be low moments too. So yeah, you just have to find ways to best ride that wave so that it can help you from not only like your personal goal standpoint when it comes to your profession, but also from a mental standpoint too, because that's very important. They're all related.
Mm. And just we'll end it with one more. I love this Stephen Liu, who is he's a shy introvert, public speaking engineer. And so it sounds like he said, in just two calls of June, I gained a new perspective on how to grow my career coaching business. He asked me the right question to determine my motivation and help bring up my confidence. He's a great mentor as well as a good friend who provides his true, honest point of view. I highly recommend working with June to help you accomplish your goals. I love what he said about, like, just being a good friend, right? Like, I think it all comes down to just being a good person. I think those are the people that, like, there's people, like, there's go-to people who, like, you always want to hit up, like, you're like, oh my God, like, I want their perspective on things. And I think it just comes down to the relationship at the end of the day.
Amen. For me, I think relationship is super important. And in any type of coaching relationship, whatever it is, it should feel like a partnership, right? You're co-creating together. And you know, when it comes to business, if you will, right? And I've been, you know, I get coaching, I've been in masterminds, and there are folks who are very focused on sales and marketing. But when it comes to, like, client delivery, it's not where you would want it to be. Like, for me, it's really, really important to, like, focus on client delivery, because that's what's most important. And this is very similar to, like, what you feel in the corporate world, right? At the end of the day, it's more important that, like, that's how trust is built. That's how, like, deep and meaningful relationships are built. And when you can do that, I feel like you can open up a specific space where, like, you can trust each other and work on things or have conversations and do things that aren't necessarily as accessible if you were not able to have that conversations, right? And it's important to, like, you know, like, I'm a big believer of just being, like, I'm very direct and honest, but in a kind way, right? You can say two different things in a very different manner. That's why they're just saying context determines content, right? Like, you can just say it in, like, a fun and a receptive manner, or you can just say it in a very rude and jerk manner. And I think it's really important to make sure that you figure out a way to just communicate where the person is receptive of that, because that's super important too. But super important.
Yeah. We talked about a lot of different topics. Like, my initial takeaways from just our conversation is, like, really just doubling down on meditation. I do think, like, really when we trust our intuition and when we follow our heart and when there's alignment, like you said, between everything, where the practice, like the head part, which helps us, like, get to the next level, helps us kind of, like, progress and learn and become better human beings, but also, like, really trusting our gut, where, like, hey, like, this is, our parents might not like this, or obviously our manager that, you know, we're quitting a job, like, might not like this, but what do we actually want, right? And then also like just the way you talk about like just being really in tune with things that make you smile and happy, right? Whether that's nature or just doing something nice for someone else or just listening to something that makes you laugh, like just really being aware of like, hey, well, what do you care about? Not what does your wife want? Not what does your kids want? Well, what do you want? Right? Because I think there's so many of us that lose ourselves like in being parents. And like, I see this too, right? Where like, they're so attached to their kids and that, you know, if their kid has like a bad, like grade, like they're devastated. Like it's hard for them to detach from that, you know?
Yeah. I think the one thing I'm going to go back to everything you mentioned, it's meditation. And here's why. Cause like at the end of the day, like a lot of like most folks, especially in the business world, you're pretty like smart, right? You can solve problems and regardless of what, like how you're doing. And there's like the saying that I love is like, if you can actually like solve your way through life, you would already have solved it. Right. Whereas meditation, it helps you just get out of your head and then really just tap into, if you will, inner wisdom. And I don't mean in a spiritual manner, but it helps you like tap into this level of silence where you actually start talking to more, let's say yourself, and you get to ask more of what like you actually want and the decisions that you want to make. And those are the things that can actually start popping up. So everything that Davidson mentioned in terms of expectations, right? Or like figuring out what makes you feel good, that those answers can come through a lot in meditation because it happens in silence. So yeah, I just want to share like everything that Davidson mentioned, the points, like if it's, it comes back to like meditation can help you experience more of that.
And what are some of the meditation resources that you would look into? And I could send links to that too.
This is a hard one because it depends on where the person is on their meditation journey. Because someone who is more of a beginner, I would say for someone, let's say, who's just starting off and, or let's say you had a hard time meditating, do something related to breath work, whether it's like box breathing. The reason for that is it helps you focus on a specific point, which in this case is your breath. And if you just focus on that, it's really hard to like fall asleep. And also Navy SEALs use it. So it's very popular among Navy SEALs. So like, it's a thing like a lot of people use, especially when it comes to performance, right? Now, if you've kind of graduated where, and then box briefing can happen just like 5 minutes, 10 minutes. But if you've, let's say, are ready for the next level, try like an app, if you will, like Headspace, Calm, or you can find these free resources. And then from there, you might tap into a different type of feeling, whether it's tapping to your body, feeling more of like your head, your arms, whatever it is, and getting more centered. Now, beyond that, there is more of like the spiritual element where you can feel a sense of oneness with the world and things along those lines. I haven't done it myself, but I know Davidson, like you've done like transcendental. It seems like that helps you do that. I do like my own kind of meditation, but outside of it, there's someone named Joe Dispenza. He is like, his work is like great. He bridges, like he brings science to the mysticism, right? But those meditations can go to like an hour, right? So a lot of the folks, I don't recommend you starting unless like you're a hardcore spiritual meditation person, you're like going to go all in. So it really depends on where you are and what you tried in the past. So I'll kind of bucketize it or categorize those three categories. But if you're just looking to just get started, just do something breathwork related. Do like box breathing or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm curious. It sounds like the 2 week thing you were talking about, was that Vipassana?
It was not Vipassana. It was the meditation that I started off and I joined. And it's not popularized. It actually originated from Korea. And there's a specific method that they like walk you through. And pretty much you're just meditating. It's like 24/7, meaning you wake up. We woke up at 6:30 or something, grabbed breakfast, started meditation at 8, and then you have lunch, meditation until like 10 p.m. And then you just go through that cycle.
Wow.
Even later. Yeah. For like, I feel like it was 14 days and it was an interesting experience. I'm happy I did it.
Would you like to share what you got out of that particular experience? Because that sounds like a very profound experience.
So I would just do my best to summarize it to maybe they're related, right? I think what it comes down to is that sense of oneness again. And it's really, the reason I say this oneness, and I want to kind of explain it in a more practical manner, if you will, but if any of you watch like Good Will Hunting, right? You know, there's a moment where I'm getting crap. Anyways, they talk about the Sistine Chapel, or like looking at Sistine Chapel and looking at the artwork, right? And I could talk to you about like how amazing it is, but until like you see there and go there for yourself, you can't experience and understand it. It's like, let's say you went through an amazing travel vacation and you're talking about that location on your honeymoon or whatever it is, and you tell me about it, and I'm like, that sounds amazing, but I won't know it until I actually go there myself. So it's a sense of oneness where you kind of have this out of body experience where you feel connected to everything, right? There's no concept of you and me. There's no concept of like anything actually, like your name or I or whatever. And you just feel connected to everything, right? Some people will call that like God, like in, because I'm Korean, in Korean, God means like Hananim, and Hana means one in Korean, right? So you do feel this, again, I grew up Christian. I consider myself more spiritual, but like I do believe in a higher power. But like you feel the sense of oneness, right? And you have a deeper level of understanding of just like that process of disassociating yourself. And when you're doing that like hardcore, like you don't have anything else to think. So you're so immersed in that and you just don't have any thoughts outside of that. You don't have any thoughts about the future. You don't have any thoughts about the past. You're just kind of in that moment and you're just there. That's what it feels like. And you just feel connected with everything. Mm. And not that I experienced at that time, you can feel the sense of like crazy love, if you will, that I felt for everything. And when you tap into that, the idea of separation goes away. And the idea of separation is what causes pain, right? Meaning, you know, what I mean by that is like, let's go beyond like, the reason there's so much like hardships and pain in our world is because there's this concept of you and me, whether it's through race, gender, ethnicity, whatever it is. If you can go beyond that, like you realize that, you know, we're all human beings. They're like you're my brother, right? You're my sister, right? And that's when you feel like connected to everything. And that's where I feel like a lot of the healing can happen. This is just a different chat conversation for another day, but that's more of a more spiritual.
No, I love it. This is an unpopular topic, but I feel the same way with psychedelics, right? That's why I dabble, because those are the moments where I feel like I'm the butterfly, or I'm, and it's weird to, but you really lose that like sense of self and the ego. When I've done it, I've like, I saw myself as like my best friend, or I've seen myself as my wife, right? Like there's less of a, because I think it's very Western for us to individually win the awards, like best employee of the month. Like it's very like me focused, versus that's what I appreciate about the Eastern cultures. It's more of that collectiveness and, you know, like really being conscious about, am I affecting my neighbors and stuff like that, right? So it's you know, I think both has its ups and downs. I think that we need that perfect balance of both. But yeah, all really, really interesting stuff. Completely unrelated. Oh, did you have anything to say on that?
No, I'm all set.
So what's up with so many Koreans being like super Christian? Is that like, I don't know, that's what I've noticed. I used to go to Korean church when I was younger. Is that like, I'm not really sure, but I have noticed like every Korean person I know is Christian pretty much.
Yeah, I don't know the history behind it, but that's the kind, like I'm in, like when we're having this conversation, I'm actually in Korea right now. Yeah. Even it's just, I feel like the major denomination in Korea, or it's more of the popular one. Like I'm from American Samoa, for some reason, like for there too, like 90% plus people are more of like the Baptist or Christian, they're religious, right? So I don't know where it originates from, but it does come back to like, let's say in Korea, that's also the case too. I'm going to guess that's how it just expanded to just the Western world. And majority of the people, just like numerically speaking, like they just took that on and they just built it there. So I don't have an exact like historical explanation. Sorry, Davidson.
Well, I guess a better question, what I was trying to get to is like, what have you gotten out of like Christianity? And because I guess I'm pretty, I would say I'm like atheist. And some of the most people that I would say I look up to, a lot of people who are like very Christian, like my cousin, my mentors, and they seem to love it. And for me, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I just don't see the appeal like personally.
Oh, I might not be the right person to ask, but if I had to guess, it's probably the community element of it, especially as an international student. I think that's a big part of it, just religion and church. Like a lot of the times it's nice to get together, especially if you like, you don't, if you're the only Asian or Korean in a group in a new setting, A church is one of the best places to actually meet other people like you and be in a supportive community. And once you're there, then you're going to naturally just go there because you just like what it provides, right? And also when it comes to spirituality, you know, for me, my mom's Christian. She's hardcore like Christian, meaning she's a deacon, Bible school, and then like choir, all that stuff. For me, there was a few things that I didn't really appreciate as much. It was a combination of one, as at least when I was going to church, it was this idea of like, if you're not Christian, you're not like kind of welcome, or this is the only way to do things. I'm all about do whatever that makes you a good person, right? Whatever your belief is, I'm all about that. And it was interesting where like people like who would be there for like 20 plus years, adults, and I'm just in middle school, they would have an argument and they would turn their backs against you know, the church. And I'm like, that's kind of weird. People who dedicated their lives doing that. So that's why I'm more spiritual. I do believe in God. I think a higher power. I think when you tap into faith through prayer, like how you tap into like a higher power, I think that's another element that people go back to community and faith, meaning believing something beyond them, because that is a different level of, I can talk about it from a performance standpoint. It's a different lever, because when you allow God to like come through you or whatever higher power, doubt, fear, all of that melts away.
Isn't it funny how we're all seeking the same thing and yet we're all so right? We all want to be right all the time. It's like we're all different, or people say we're all different, but in reality, we're all seeking the same thing, whether it's psychonauts to experiment with acid, LSD and stuff like that, whether it's religion, whether it's like meditation, like it's literally the same exact thing.
Amen. That's what I've noticed about religion. And honestly, I was having this conversation with my mom and she explained, she's like, yeah, I know what that feels like. And I'm like, oh, you do? And then I was like, yeah, I don't know if that's God or whoever you'd want to call it. She's like, crazy kid. Once I said that was her response, right? And at the end of the day, like what I've noticed, whether it's meditation, religion, they all work to get into the same end goal or end outcome. Mm-hmm. And it's this feeling of oneness. And you know, you can just access that in different shapes and form. But that's what I felt like. And it's based on just like, honestly, when I felt that oneness too, I was reading like certain parts of the scriptures, like I just have a different understanding. And even talking to other people's in like their religious standpoint, I'm like, oh, you guys are just marching towards like something very similar. It just looks different and it has different labels and names and you guys do different things. But it's the same thing. Like you guys are looking for this. We're all looking for the same thing.
It's like mountain climbers who like climb Mount Everest, or surfers who like get that 50-foot wave, and skydivers. Like it's all, I feel like it's all the same, right? It's like, you know, the avenue in which they do it is like, well, this helps me feel connected to like, get, like you said, ultimately get out of my body and into like really present to the universe and the world and the stars or whatever. Right. Fascinating stuff, man.
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, June. I just want to acknowledge you for like really just trusting your intuition and diving deep despite the success, despite, because I think it's hard to quit, you know, when you've gone to like a BC, you know, Boston College, or, you know, when you get into these like prestigious programs, there's so many people that you want to serve, right? Whether it's like your future family or your future spouses or your whatever it is, like you want to give back, right? But your way of giving back right now is just so fulfilling and satisfying, because it's coming from a place of like authenticity and a place of like being of service, right? That you want, right? So I think that's courageous. So I appreciate that, man.
Thanks so much. It means a lot. And right back at you. At the end of the day, I think both you and I, like, I think we're marching towards something bigger than ourselves. And that was one of the bigger catalysts. There's different reasons. And there's different things that I had to go through, but I just had this like thing where I wanted to share what I learned. I wanted to help others. I wasn't sure what that form was. Big dream is to somehow make education more relevant. But yeah, I think it's when you find that, like you kind of march towards a bigger vision to like serve others, it does help you make decisions too. So there's different ways to make decisions, but yeah, thanks. And right back at you.
Yeah. It's, I think what's cool is because you have that business context and you have that business background, it's digestible for folks who have a negative perception of this woo-woo world. So I think you're just able, you're like that middleman, you're like that mediator between, like, you're that gateway between, like, all right, because I think there's folks that are like, from the get-go, their parents were kind of like, quote unquote, like more hippies, like more spiritual, that were more into that world. But because a lot of us Asians are so process, or is like, are so career focused, that, you know, we're not really in touch with our inner child and things like that, I think you're like that mechanism that really can lead people to a way that's more fulfilling ultimately. So I think you're like that perfect gateway drug in a way.
Appreciate you. That means a lot.
All right, June. Thanks, man. Take care.
Thanks for having me.